Welcome to your Kids Don't Suck. Kids don't suck anything that's sweet.
Parenting's hard, you don't know what to do. You're blaming your kids, but it's probably you. You love your kids and that you can trust. Just remember your kids don't suck.
Welcome to your Kids Don't Suck. Cultivating closeness with your children through non-coercive conscious parenting. We're your hosts, Kara Tedstone and Rathia Lee. Let's dive in and grow together.
Welcome back to your Kids Don't Suck. This is a labor of love. We love doing this podcast. We look forward to it. It is so thrilling to help parents, to process our journeys, to give a new perspective on how to parent that is non-authoritarian, that is collaborative, and is ultimately the most loving path we have found. And today we have decided to bring on a parent who is mid-process, who jumped on this approach, this non-coercive approach, with her four kids and has just been really in it. And her name is Amy, and I know Amy from my support groups. We're going to explore what's happening with Amy right now and her partner and her life and what's it like with all the different age children and anything else Amy wants to share. So welcome, Amy.
Thank you so much. I feel so honored to be here.
We're so excited to have you. Amy Nimchek is a mother of four young children and an advocate for non-coercive collaborative parenting. Her journey began when she became a parent at 23 and set out alongside her fully committed partner to break generational cycles and raise her children in a way that honored their autonomy, emotions, and inner wisdom. Through years of learning, unlearning, and deep inner healing, she found her way to an approach that felt like home. Amy's also a trauma survivor on a path to healing, and today she integrates her lived experience, parts work, and deep intuition to model a path of connection, repair, and radical trust in children. She also does peer counseling and continues to explore healing across generations. It's so great to have a parent who's right in the middle.
Yes. Yeah. I'm kind of in the thick of it with the ages of my kids and kind of when we started. And so four kids, they're 9, 7, 5, and 3. We really jumped on this non-coercive path, I think about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago. So our oldest was about 6 and messing it up a lot along the way. But yeah, so I first became a parent when I was 23. Mm. And, you know, I started my parenting journey a lot through instinct and trial and a desire to break cycles. I kind of knew that from the start, and I felt that on the inside in my intuition. We unfortunately didn't have the language or the tools for non-coercion back then. So we were making really small shifts as a parent, as parents, my partner and I. I remember each step kind of brought us to this journey. These little shifts that we would make together. I can remember at the very beginning, you know, we decided we didn't want to use corporal punishment. That was a very, we weren't going to do that. Both of us were raised in that type of environment. So that felt like something neither of us wanted to do for our children. And then along the way, we would just make these small little adjustments when things didn't feel right. I remember my oldest trying to make him share his toys with like his siblings or his friends. And my partner would come up to me and, or he's the one that came up to me and was like, "Hey, I read something that we probably shouldn't make children share. We should try to model taking turns. And these are their things that they get to play with for as long as they want." And it was those small little shifts that just kept bringing us here. When thinking back on our story, I didn't have this aha moment where I was like, "Oh, this is where we need to go." I had a lot of moments where we stepped out of the traditional paradigm and it led us here, but it wasn't, I couldn't think of this like big experience that we had. It was very gradual to get here.
So you started when your oldest was 6.
Yeah, he was about 6 when we...
How long ago was that?
So that was about 3.5 years ago.
Oh, so it's been 3.5 years.
Yeah. And we went through the tornado phase that you talked about in one of your podcasts. And I didn't know that that's what we were going through. It was because I hadn't found you yet or Vivek yet. And I just kept trying to tell myself, especially my oldest, he let out so much physical expression when he was letting go of all the control and I want to say trauma, even though that sounds strong, but trauma that we kind of passed on through our own patterns that we weren't conscious or aware of. And so and still, even 3 years later, he still has moments where he will physically express, I think, this suppression that he's held on to for so long. And it's been really hard to work through those moments with him. But I keep showing up. And just the other day, we had a hard moment on Friday together. And when we repaired, which, you know, we all know how important repair is, I repair every single time. I just told him, like, I will never, ever give up. Like, I will never give up trying. It makes me want to cry because it was a beautiful moment with him. And it's true. I will never give up because once you're in this space, you can't turn back. There's no turning back. When you understand the philosophy and then you start embodying it, there's no return, even when you mess it up.
I'm getting choked up also. I also want to explain to people what the tornado phase is.
Yeah.
So the tornado phase is when, and this is that term was created by Vivek Patel, who is like our mentor. So you're in the trap of all the punishment, control, shaming cycles that we're taught is normal. And then you find this path, or maybe you find gentle parenting, or maybe you find conscious parenting, whatever. And you realize, wow, controlling my kid is hurting all of us. We're getting further apart. This is not what I wanted, you know. And then also, the more you control, the more you realize you're going to have to control. I went through that. You're like, if I'm starting now to, like, what's the word? Like, follow through on my word. You can't do this. Then what am I going to use to make my kid follow my instructions? And you have to figure out, what are you going to use? Oh, it's so sad and scary and tiring and doesn't get you what you really want. But anyway, when you decide, I'm going to stop those things, you start taking your hands out of everything. You stop, like, correcting all the time and punishing and making your kid do things. It's a tornado phase where everything goes crazy. It's chaos. It's chaos. And you're like, I just said no. My kid isn't listening. What am I going to do? And there's, like, this period of time where you have to find new tools. You have to find new thinking. You have to recondition your brain. The family has to reorient. Everyone's roles have to change. If you're in a couple, that has to, like, that comes up. Like, what are we doing? Do we agree? And all of that stuff. So that's the tornado phase.
I was just curious, Amy, what it was like for you before you made these shifts. What was it like in your parenting paradigm? Was it more, how would you describe it? More sort of traditionally authoritative?
Yeah, I think so. I think I had these moments where I was in alignment with, I would say, non-coercive. I did think of a story when my oldest was about three. We were gone for the weekend, and I think my husband was working at the time. So I just had him and a baby at the time. And he was going through a biting phase. And specifically, he was biting his cousin. And my brother and sister-in-law are very authoritative parents. And when he bit his cousin this one time, you know, everyone kind of had a big response. And I went out and I got him and we went back into a room together. And my whole family, I know, thought that I was punishing him, shaming him. I'm sure, you know, you can't bite. This is why, all this stuff. But instead, we cuddled and I was telling him all the beautiful moments we had during that day and didn't mention the biting at all. And just, we had this beautiful moment of connection between him and I. And yeah, it was beautiful. Unfortunately, it wasn't the aha moment that I wish it would have been, but I had those little pockets where I really listened to the intuition instead of what I was raised in. And in that moment, I was really pulled to connect with him. And I'm so happy I listened to it. So I think we ignore it a lot, and society makes you ignore it. And I did after that. There was other moments where I did ignore my intuition. And we tried taking gentler approaches in the, you know, the gentle parenting community. My oldest, I remember giving him a couple timeouts when he was probably around four, and those were heart-wrenching. And so every time we would make a decision like that, because we were like, you know, we're not spanking him, but we'll do a timeout because we thought that was better. That also just hurt us deeply. And so then we, you know, we went back to the drawing board. My husband and I were like, okay, we can't do timeouts. What can we do now? Okay, we're going to shift to time-ins, which is like, we're with them and we're the co-regulator. And I'll never forget the first time-in I did with my oldest. And he just wrapped his arms around me and we just hugged on the floor laying together. But eventually, those didn't feel good either. It was like, we're taking him because he's having a big emotional response to something. We're taking him into another room, even though he's with us. It just still felt like there was the rupture. The rupture was still there. So then we dropped those. And that's really when we dove fully into, I feel like, non-coercive parenting. We dropped, that's when we dropped pretty much everything. Limits on food, tablet time, sleep. My oldest goes to sleep at like 1:30, 2 in the morning every night, but that's his natural sleep cycle. So we try to honor that, even though it's exhausting for us sometimes.
Well, so when did you find me or Vivek, or like, when did you realize there's actually a word for this, or there's a framework for this?
I feel like, so it was about 2 years ago that I found Gentle Parents Unite, and I found Sujai first. That really helped give me the language of what we were doing. I joined her weekly coaching calls too, and that was also amazing because she really started to treat me the way I was trying to treat my children. So that was my first experience too of having that come back to me. And then Vivek, he randomly would come up on like TikTok or YouTube shorts. I remember too, sometimes thinking about the stuff he was saying, I was like, what? That's crazy. What is he talking about? And now, of course, now that I'm really deep in this, everything he says just clicks.
Right. So what's it like having little ones that are just born into this, right?
Yeah. I was just talking to my husband actually before this call about that, about how interesting it is to see our 3-year-old who she's basically kind of had this from the start, and how amazing it is how she's able to collaborate at just 3 years old.
Yeah.
Where my oldest, for instance, it took years to be able to get to this space where he can collaborate with me. And we still struggle with collaboration.
Oh my gosh.
Because of how deep
those roles are, you know, sort of cemented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and he still struggles with the safety of where we are right now, I think.
I think that's really profound, like to sort of just acknowledge that like, that's okay. Like there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of it. And that's what is, you know, sort of the pathway for a lot of families who start later.
Yeah.
And also, you know, that's what, that is kind of a reality. Like that's what happens, is like, it's really hard to trust and it takes a long time. That's why Vivek's always talking about like, open up your lens of like the amount of time that you think it should take for something to fall into place. It's like, it's a years long process.
Yeah.
I have the same thing with my 3-year-old. We've been doing this since birth, and she actually yesterday was with a couple kids and they were fighting over toys, and she went over, and they're her age too. She went over and she was like, why don't we play with it this way, and turned it into a game. And she just like helped them collaborate and like solve the problem, because like, that's how we do things at home. Like it's just easy for her to see like these solutions and these ways to collaborate that are like peaceful and connected. And it's just amazing.
Yes. Yes. I love that so much.
I think that people don't understand who are not doing this. I'm probably most parents who are not doing this approach, that when you treat a child like a whole person and they feel like a whole person, you really can like negotiate at like any age. You can be like, well, what do you think? Let's try this. How about that? Like, and people can't conceive of that. They can't conceive of that.
Right. Because I always hear people in the back of my mind, like, what do you do about things like bedtime, things like TV, things like junk food? Like when it comes time, like, well, there has to be a point, right, where you turn off the TV. And it's like, well, when you just kind of have collaboration built in, everything's a collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
you just, that's how you do things. It's constant. It's constant negotiation. It's constant collaboration. It's never my way or the highway, you know, it just isn't. So it's like, I don't get to actually just turn the TV off. That's just not what we would do. The capacity that kids have, though, to be able to do that, I think is really lost on a lot of adults. They don't think they can, you know, that they actually can come up with solutions that work for everybody. But you have to go through that process of trial and error and figuring out and losing your mind a little bit and having a lot of patience and feeling frustrated and maybe being late sometimes, you know, to actually get to that point. But it's just, it's so true what you're saying. Like, your 3-year-old can absolutely, like, the capacity they have for collaboration is unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. It's so profound.
It is.
I remember in the tornado phase too, I had a lot of thoughts where I thought this was impossible with four kids. I was like, this is absolutely impossible. I understand it. I'm embodying it most of the time. But this is impossible. How am I supposed to do this with four kids? Like, I remember thinking at one point, oh, if I only had one or two, I would be rocking this right now. I'd be doing so good. I would still be messing it up if I had one or two. But that was the tornado phase. And now we're at this phase where we still struggle. We still have hard moments for sure. But it's so much better. It is so much better. And the collaboration part is not only just between me and my children, it's between each other as well. They collaborate with each other, which is so beautiful to see them do that.
That is amazing.
Will you tell me more? I want to hear more. What does that look like?
Yeah.
Can you think of an example?
The first thing that came to mind is sometimes, you know, two or even three of them, sometimes all four will try to all talk to me at once. And my brain, I mean, I cannot take in more than one of them at a time. So, you know, I'll tell them, okay, but like, my brain cannot process all of you at once trying to give me this information. I'm going to have to listen to you at one at a time. And then they start to collaborate with each other of who gets to talk to me first, who has the most, their information needs to be heard before the other one. And then, yeah, then they decide, okay, you get to go first, but then I get to go after you. And then, and if I forget what I'm saying, mama, make sure to check in with me. And so it's just this process that we've all created together of all working together. And it took, I mean, it took so much work, but we're there, and it's the most beautiful process that we all get to live together.
I feel like I get such a sense of ease. Like, obviously having young children is chaotic. And then the more you have, it's chaotic. It's so busy. It's so demanding. Your needs, I mean, there's just no time in the day, right, to get everything you need to get done.
Yeah.
But the way that you describe that is that, like, the chaos is still there. It's still difficult. It's still challenging, and it's still busy, but you have a flow and a system that allows you all to feel heard, which is a game changer. Because if it was just you snapping and, you know, everybody's dysregulated all the time, I mean, and you didn't have that sort of relational dynamic, it would be so difficult to just get through the day every day. It would be so much harder.
And it was. When we were in that space before, I feel like I was stressed out all the time.
Yeah, because everybody asks us about, like, having more than one kid, you know, people find it like, wow, how could you possibly do this with four? But the way that you're describing it is like, that's what you get. That's the payoff.
Yeah.
It becomes much more functional.
Yes.
But I guess the tornado phase must have been also really taxing too. I guess maybe people worry about that, right? How could I possibly let go of the structure, let go of the rhythm and the routine and the expectations, because then it's disarray and, you know, chaos. And yeah, I can see, you know, I can totally see that, why people would be terrified.
You get these moments though that give you the glimpse of the light that's there. And I think we've talked about that in the support group, of writing down these little moments so you don't forget them, which I have. And I think that's an important part in the tornado phase, is writing down the moments of connection that are real and you can feel it. That was one thing I was thinking about the other day, of, I never thought I could actually feel the energy of love until I was in this space connecting with my children. A lot of the time it's in the moments of repair, but I really feel this, like, energetic flow of love between me and them. that I have never felt before.
Yeah, you know, I did this crazy, I did this whole thing different than some people. Some people do it gradually, but I was studying for like 2 years and then I said, tomorrow I'm starting with no limits or boundaries. I'm taking off all the controls. I decided like on one day to do it. And on that day, when I took her out to buy candy, we went and got her whatever she wanted. I felt that flow of love in a completely different way than I had felt before. It was dramatic for me. It makes me want to cry. I felt joy.
Yeah.
I felt a joy. Like we were together in a joyful space that I had not felt before. Because when you have to control, it's immediate separation. It just is. When you're in that role where you have all the power and you're controlling, yeah, it's like a wall. Even though you love your child so much and you think you're doing it because you're trying to help them. You've convinced, I need to control them. That's what parenting is. You think it's what you're supposed to do. So it's like so amazing when you get told that you could stop, even though nobody knows how to do that. That's why we do this podcast.
I talked to all of my children before this several times of like, I'm going to be on a podcast, you know, and my oldest, which I was really surprised because he likes to also kind of be in a little, he was like, yeah, you can share everything. And I was like, oh, okay, great. And then my 7-year-old just changed his mind 2 nights ago and was like, yeah, you can share about me. Just say my age, not my name. And I'm like, okay, that's great.
Wow.
But my 5-year-old is very adamant about do not share anything about me, which hurts because I'm like, oh, we've had these beautiful stories that would be so helpful. So I feel like one day, hopefully he'll let me share, you know, some stories about him. But for my 7-year-old, when we took off, because screen time, I feel like is a big thing in this, especially right now, I took all the iPads away for like a year and a half. This was a while, obviously a long time ago. And then when we went non-coercive, our 7-year-old found all the iPads. So we brought them all back out. And for a long time, he was on it all the time. Just that was, and all the fears that come with being on, you know, your tablet all the time. And now, 3 years later, he just told me 2 days ago, he thinks he has such a great balance with screen time, which I agree with him. He does. Sometimes he'll wake up and he'll go on his iPad for just a little bit before we go downstairs. And then he turns it off when we go downstairs. And then sometimes we'll have it a little bit before bedtime, but that's it. I mean,
wow.
And he, I know. But it took a lot to get there. I had to really let go when he was on it for just hours and hours and hours. And I have this fear of, oh my gosh, I'm being such a bad mom by not, you know, telling him to get off and go do something else but giving him the space to figure it out on his own was just amazing for him to be able to, what feels good for him.
That is a big one. That's very important.
That's
very
a huge
important.
One.
Let's not go past that too quickly because
there's so much to say.
Yeah, because also when kids are working on their autonomy, when they're like, really? Do I really have my own autonomy? Usually they use screens to assert their autonomy.
Yeah.
They're like, nope, I'm going to be on this as much as I want. No one can stop me. And they, you know, and you know, and everyone has all those things. It's addictive, blah, blah, blah. It's frying their brain, all that stuff. Every, you know, I remember my daughter decided to put, her and her friends like found these apps that limit your screen time. They put it on their phones together. They decided that they thought they were on it too much and that they thought they were addicted and they put the screen time limits on it. So when it's actually coming from your child, it's a completely different thing than if you're enforcing it.
Well, and they're able to collaborate. That's the best. I'm like, hey, do you want to go outside and play? And oh, 5 more minutes, or I'm going to finish this episode and then we can go outside. And they do. They put it down.
Yeah.
That was, it's not, oh, I want to do one more episode. Oh, no, I want to. They really are in this collaboration space.
Wow.
Only when you can really let go, you know? When you can really let go and trust that, which is so hard. And I've been there too, but I find the same. I mean, my 3-year-old, like, will literally, she can turn it off with the Google speaker. So she'll I'll say, okay, you can turn off the TV whenever you're done and we'll do our thing. And, you know, she'll be bored. She'll be like, okay, hey, Google, turn off the TV. And then she'll come and find me and we'll do whatever. And it's like, God, I'm so grateful that it's not a battle. Like, I can't. I always really was worried when she was much younger. I was so worried about facing this sort of like screen time battle that everybody talks about. Like, you're going to have to limit it. You're going to have to figure out a way. They can't watch more than 20 minutes a day. Like, what are you planning to do? And I'm like, nothing. I don't want to do that. That sounds so scary and hard. So, you know, it's like, it's such a relief when you see them actually just really listen to their bodies and go, I'm bored of this now. I've had enough of this now. And it's not coming from externally.
That can take a very, very, very long time. And it takes so much longer than you want it to. And I can honestly say that the screen time was the biggest source of stress and worry for me in this whole process. More than anything else. More than sugar, eating sugar. I mean, more than anything.
And the thing with the screen time discussion is that, like, of course it's very complex and layered. And as kids get older, there's like all this content that is like scary to engage with. And, you know, we know the possible outcomes of just letting our kids willy-nilly. But what is forgotten, I think, is that, like, we're not hands-off parents though. You know, we are actually right there with our kids. We're trying to open the door so that we can guide them, we can help them, and we can be there with them collaboratively without shame and without judgment and without sort of authority and trying to take it away. But that, you know, we'll help them make good decisions too. It's not like we're just letting them, you know, close the door, do whatever you want to do. You know, we're going to go do our own thing all the time. When you get that, when you're really sort of embodying this practice and you really understand that it actually requires us so much work in other ways, requires a lot of like reading and thinking and deep sitting with and side by side and playing Roblox and getting into the things your kids like and, you know, joining them. And it's a whole different way of working with your kids.
When you just talked about some of the games that they play, my two oldest are really into Minecraft. I made an account and I'll join their worlds, or I'll make a world and they'll join my world. But we process together in these Minecraft worlds together. Like this one time they were both, I can't remember, I'm sure they were mad at me about something, and they created this maze that I had to go through, this really hard maze that I had to go through. But at the end, I opened up a chest full of my favorite flowers, these like white flowers.
So sweet.
And they both built little hearts next to it. So we like virtually went through this process together.
Yes. That is so beautiful. I mean, I just think it's amazing that you can see it that way. Like, that is deeply, deeply beautiful. That is a beautiful way of seeing that. And that is what that's about. Yeah. And I think like, it's easy to just be like, oh, like stupid Minecraft. Like, it's such a waste of time. Like, no, I'm not interested. I don't want to. But then you like look at what you miss, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to struggle when my kid's into video games and stuff, you know, if the time comes, because I really suck at that stuff. Like, I'm bad at it. It's hard for my brain and I'm going to have to learn. Yeah. I don't want to miss out. Like, what if she creates a maze for me and flowers at the end? Like, I need to know.
Right.
I need to know.
So one thing that's been helpful for me is reframing language, just even in little ways, like, you know, instead of using aggression or something, we use, you know, a physical process, or, you know, they're getting their anger out in a physical way. So for my daughter, I talk about like potty independence. I don't like the word potty training because I just, so.
Oh, I love that.
I'll say potty independence.
That's great.
So we recently went through, her learning potty independence, and she's been doing absolutely amazing. So proud of her. But we went through a moment where it was really hard. We had like four, you know, a few days where, oh my gosh, it was really hard. But she never asked to go back in diapers or anything like that. So I really tried to be like, okay, this is just where we're at. Even though we're going through 20 different clothes in one day, it was so hard. And internally, I was like I was struggling. I was like, oh my gosh, I, you know, should have kept her in diapers. Maybe I should go buy diapers. And at one moment, we went to go cuddle on the couch together, and she just grabs my face and turns it to her, and she goes, "I love you, mama." And then we play this game where she says, "You're the best." And I go, "You're the best." And she goes, "You're the best." And I go, "You're the best." And then at the end, she goes, "We're the best." And we gave just a big hug and embraced each other. And it just made me think, like, man, if I was still stuck in this old paradigm, we would have totally missed that moment. We would have never had that moment together.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, yes.
And it was such a beautiful connecting moment that we all talk about, you know, that energy of love between us. And yeah, I would have totally missed it if I would have just let, if I hadn't worked on myself and gained all the tools for myself to work through that internally.
It's true because, you know, like something like the potty, the changing of the clothes and the like watching and the dealing with like just the exhaustion and the stress of like dealing with that, just biting your tongue and not projecting. I mean, I so hear you. It's like that has saved my like relationship with my daughter more times than I can even, I don't even know. I mean, I don't know where we would be actually if I didn't have this practice because it is so internal.
Yes.
I mean, like, I think that I would have treated her so horribly so much of the time in comparison to what I'm able to do now, because it's just constant, like vigorous, rigorous work on yourself. And then, yeah, even amidst like a chaotic, like mess everywhere, changing the kid, the three other kids are around. It's so hard. It's just hard. You're still able to have that moment where your kid is like, "I love you." And you're like, "I love you too." And it's felt, it's actually felt like our kids see us working too. Like my daughter watches me when I'm regulating myself and I'm trying not to, and I'm just, and I'm going, "You know what? No, you know what? It's not your fault, honey. I just, it's just me. It's just whatever I'm saying." And she's watching me and she's going, "Oh yeah, you're the best mommy." You know, like they get it. They know what's happening.
Yeah, they do. They do. My 7-year-old is very, very, very empathetic. And when he sees me in those moments where I'm self-regulating and I'm going through my own process, he always comes up to me and he'll just rub my arm or he'll give me a hug and he'll be like, "I'm sorry, you're having a very hard day today."
That's beautiful.
And
right.
Yeah, he just did that to me just the other day on Friday when I was having a really hard time. He's just, and I'm like, "Oh, thank you. Like I'm doing okay. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to work through this." And he's like, "I know. I'm sorry you're having a hard day."
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. And he shows up with presence.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to learn too.
And emotional vulnerability and attunement and authenticity. I mean, these are things that, like, you know, especially our kids raise male. You know, they desperately need explicit teaching, which is done through us and our behaviors, right? Not through like, "Here's how you do it," but, you know, "Here's actually what this looks like in practice." So I mean, what a gift for, you know, your 7-year-old to be able to just attune to you in that way and really believe in what he's saying and feeling it, right? It's just, it's, I could cry. It's, that's relational. That's relational. You know, that's like how you live a relational life. That's just the most beautiful gift you could give a child.
Yeah.
I want to say that, Amy, I think it's so great that you're connected that moment with her when you said, you're the best, and you hugged, that you connected that to the fact that you were that day working on letting go of control. Like you connecting that. I don't know if all parents could understand that when you give up the control, you start sharing power. Those moments arise more and more, and they're more powerful and they're more clear because your child is free to love. They're not scared of you. They are free to love you. Where if you're being controlled all the time, love gets very confusing and cloudy. And, you know, you of course your kid loves you no matter what, but the control, you know, really makes it much more cloudy and difficult.
Yeah. And their love, I feel like when they're in the control, I feel like their love to you is more of trying to get you to accept them. It's not that deeper connection of love between two of you. It's this of just trying to get your acceptance and your love. That's how they're, they can't survive without you. They can't, you know, where we're near in this space, it's
right. The people pleasing, the people, mommy, daddy, parent pleasing.
It's needing approval.
They need the approval to get love and to feel safe.
And that's the issue with the whole behaviorism lens. It's like, if you see your child as needing to mold their behavior to feel okay, then and feel like that's how you have to do this work as a parent, then inevitably that is lost, because that will be felt by your child. So you have to let go of that to be able to, like, as a very first sort of step, it's like, okay, we're gonna let go of training, you know, our kids into behaving for us. We are gonna meet them where they're at instead.
Right. And some of our children have huge, huge challenges.
Huge
emotional, physical, psychological challenges. It's not like it's all rosy or anything. It's like you have to meet them at their place of incredible dysregulation and pain and acting out and whatever. I mean, yeah, it's like parent becoming the real witness.
Right, like awakening to just like the depth of one's humanity.
Mm-hmm.
All the things people really do go through.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be open to that.
Oh my God, it's so intense.
It
really is.
Yeah, I've just been realizing my daughter's 13. She's interfacing with seventh graders who are basically evil. She's interfacing with meanness. She's really having to figure out cruelty and meanness. And me and my partner were talking, and we're like, she has to interface with this. We have to stop trying to keep her from all the mean people. She actually has to work through this herself.
It's so
she
painful.
Has to feel cruelty and figure out how to navigate herself in that. We can help her, we can talk about it, but we can't do it for her, and we can't keep her from all the mean people. God, I want to so badly.
Oh, I know.
I want to be like, don't be friends with that person, they're really mean to you. Don't I can't do that, because when I do that, then she won't talk to me about it anymore. Once I judge her friend, then she's like, fine, I'm not talking to you about that friend anymore. So I have to just be open and be like, tell me more. I can't be like, fuck that kid, you know? I really want to say that. I'm like, kick that kid out. Yeah. But no, but she has to do this. And this is just one example of the millions of things our kids have to experience through living.
Right, right.
We can't punish them out of that. No matter, we can't control them out of that. And if you try, you just make it so much harder for them and you.
Right. That kind of reminds me of what I really wanted to, one of the things I wanted to talk about, which was sibling struggles. I don't call it fighting, I call it struggles. Another reframe. Right. That was a huge thing for me in this process. It was really hard for me to handle all the sibling struggles that they have. I mean, they struggle every day. There's a struggle. So, and I kept thinking, what do I need to do to fix all these struggles, where we just live in this peaceful, you know, kumbaya every day, which we have moments of that. We do. We have lots of moments of that, but we also have sibling struggles every single day. And when I finally started to learn how to show up as a witness instead of the person that's going to, you know, fix the struggle, is when I really started to see them grow together. I did have a really profound moment with my two oldest. They went through a phase where they would rip up each other's like pictures or something, or, you know, break their Lego set or whatever it was when they were mad at each other. And something in my intuition in that moment told me to not intervene, and to really just, unless they started to physically start to, you know, express themselves, I wasn't going to step in. And so I just let them, you know, rip each other's pictures up. And then they kind of went through this big process together. And then at the end, they're both sobbing because, you know, pictures were ripped up. And then they moved into repair a while later together, and they were trying to tape pictures back together for each other. One of them offered to draw up, you know, the same picture that he ripped up from the other one. And then later they both came up to me and told me that they wanted me to step in and intervene next time, which is funny. Cause I'm sitting here, I'm like, oh, this, you know, this is hard and intense, but they have not ripped each other's pictures since that happened.
That's amazing.
Which is crazy to me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine had you intervened and it just kept happening and you kept intervening and it would just be this cycle that, like, you'd be like pulling your hair out?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I guess I wonder, because we do get a lot of people who are like, what do we do about sibling struggles?
Yes. Yeah.
What would you say to parents who are like really struggling with that, like letting go or just sitting back or being a witness, like you said, versus trying to fix it or stop it?
I think what I've learned a lot throughout this process is really not trying to like fix it. I always got stuck thinking I have to fix it. I have to fix it. But it's really trying your best to show up in the middle and not trying to be on either side. I really, when things start to turn, if they start to turn physical, which sometimes they do, I'll just get in between them because they're not trying to hurt me. And so usually that can just, and I say less, say a lot less. And I try to use a lot of declarative language, which is like just narrating what's kind of going on and trying not to, you know, do any type of shame or guilt of what's going on. And I think it's, is it Vivek, is it the popcorn empathy of, you know, going back and forth with empathy, but also just trying to trust their process. But it, I mean, but it's hard, especially when things get physical. That's hard for me. I really have to, you know, step in and just be in the middle and, you know, make sure bodies are staying safe. That's really where I try to put my focus, is bodies are staying safe. But I try to reframe it in a way that they have so much practice on learning communication, conflict resolution, and empathy and collaboration. They have so many moments every single day to practice this.
Right, like this is an opportunity.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Another opportunity.
So I tried to take myself out of that.
I mean, I only have one kid, so I haven't had to deal with this much except in play groups. But I tend to, I don't know what you think about this, but I tend to, like, if Tori was ripping up, if they were ripping up each other's paper, I would draw something and be like, nobody's ripping up my paper. This is so unfair. I do stuff like that where I get really, I put myself in the conflict and make myself the focus. That's something I do a lot with younger kids. Yeah. I'll be like, no one's hitting me. And then I'll grab a pillow and then they have to hit my, you know, they're like,
yes, yeah.
No one's yelling at me. Why don't I get yelled at? You know, and then they team up. They team up on me, you know, and I just, I try to find a game in the middle of it so that they have to band together.
I've used that too. That is also very powerful. And play, of course, play is like, I remember this one time they were all having a big struggle and we ended up turning it into a bear game. And I was this big bear chasing them around the house, and the couches were these safe places that they could jump up on. And and it was so fun. We played it for like hours and hours, and then they wanted to play it again the next day. And
And then they're all on the same team trying to get away from you.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. That's a definitely a very powerful tool.
Well, I guess a lot of it is like working with the fear, because I know for some parents, I had a parent say to me like, well, you know, if my kids, they told me, they said to their children, you know, you guys have to not fight because like you guys are going to have each other one day, you know, like you guys are going to need each other. So like, that's their fear. That's the parent's fear, that what if they don't have a good relationship? Like, what will we do? You know, we can't control that. So now's the time, I guess. I need to intervene. I need to make them get along. And to work with that fear, I think, is necessary versus sort of just like letting it lead you. So you must have had to do some internal work on that fear of, you know, trusting the process that your children can actually move through a lot of these things on their own.
Yeah. And I've had moments where I've really struggled with that, where you think about the future. You're like, oh man, there was a time where my two oldest were really having a hard time together. They were having lots and lots of struggles. And for a long time, for a few weeks, and I was terrified that they were going to be these adults that just couldn't stand each other. And later on, we came to find out my oldest, when he was able to finally find the words to what he was feeling, he felt like he wasn't spending enough quality time with his brother. And so he kept saying, oh, he's always on his iPad and I don't get to spend time with him anymore. And so that's what they were struggling with for weeks, was they needed that quality connection with each other.
Right. There's an unmet need.
Yeah. And so then they were able to reconnect.
That's so fascinating because that's what happens with parents also. Like they act out or act up, or I don't know what the word is, act in, because they actually just want connection, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I love this whole idea that like loving our kids, showing up with empathy is not doing nothing. And I was thinking about your very first example where your 3-year-old at the time bit and you brought him in the room and you held him and connected with him. That's not doing nothing about his biting.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
That's meeting a need.
Yeah, because people would listen. They go, but you have to tell him that he can't bite and that biting's not okay. Blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, he'll have this memory of biting and then this huge love.
Right.
You know, that's not doing nothing.
Yeah.
Right. It's a loving intervention. I mean, it's a loving intervention. It's intervening with kindness and love.
Right. One of my kids was going through months and months of pinching me, and they would pinch me every single day, multiple times a day, whenever they felt frustrated or, you know, any emotion that, and he would pinch me right under here, like in a very sensitive part of my arm. Sometimes he would twitch. I mean, oh my gosh, it would hurt so bad. And I tried redirecting him. Oh, pinch this. Pinching is fun. Pinch the pillow. Oh, Play-Doh feels like skin. Let's pinch that. Like I tried all these different things. And, you know, sometimes I would get exhausted and frustrated and be like, ow, don't pinch me, you know, because it just, and then I went to one of Vivek's workshops and I forgot about the story that he talked about with these two kids that were hitting a lot of the adults and were hitting him. And he was the only adult there that thanked the kids for hitting him. And just embraced that they trusted him. And it just, I forgot that story. I had heard it before. And actually, I actually used it with another kid or used that approach with another kid. And it was amazing, but I forgot the power of it. Anyway, so the very next day I think it was later that day, actually, I knew I was going to get pinched. And so I was ready for it. I was like, emotionally, physically, I was like, okay, I'm going to just fully take in this pinch. And sure enough, a couple hours later, he came up to me, pinched me under my arm, and I instinctively covered my arm because it hurts. And instead, I just said, thank you. And he looked at me and he was like, what did you just say to me? And I was like, thank you so much for pinching me. And he just looks at me and says, why did you say that? And I said, because I'm really happy that you trust me with how you're feeling. Thank you so much for pinching me. And he just goes, you're welcome, and runs off. but for, gosh, it, several days. I mean, it was, he didn't pinch me again for, I want to say it was a few weeks when he finally pinched me again. Actually, no, I think it was like a month almost. It was so long that he didn't pinch me. And there was definitely moments where he would have pinched me. And this one night, we were really set up in a moment where he would pinch me. And he went in to pinch me, but instead of pinching me, he started kissing my arm and started saying, kiss revenge, which was just crazy. And he has pinched me since that. He's pinched me maybe 3 times, which is, I mean, going from multiple times every single day to 3 times in the past couple months is pretty good. And one time he pinched me and I just said, thank you for pinching me. And he goes, I knew you'd say that. And so then he actually ended up hitting me after, and then he hit me. But I thanked him again. I was like, thank you so much. And I think in that moment, I was grateful for, I think it was Vivek who says, they're not testing your boundaries, they're testing your love. And I think in that moment, it was one of those, okay, I knew you were going to thank me for pinching you, but are you going to thank me for hitting you too? Like he was really, and I did. And
wow,
I just think that like what you said, I'm still showing up through this connection. And that's what is driving our relationship for change. Cause he doesn't want to pinch me. He doesn't want to hit me.
He wants to know you're there. He's testing you.
Right. Exactly. Your love. Testing my love. Yeah.
Amy posted this on the Facebook group.
I did.
And I had a big aha because my daughter keeps kicking me out of her room, and it's triggering me so much. It's triggering me so much. I forgot that I have to go back to thanking her. I've completely lost it. But for a while, so she would ask me for something. I'd go in her room, and then she'd go, get out of my room. Or she'd go, please leave. Or she'd go, you can leave now. She has like seven ways of kicking me out of her room. And every single one of them triggers me. I feel so rejected and hurt, and all my stuff is up. So when I read Amy's post, I was like, oh, I have to thank her for kicking me out of her room. And then all of a sudden I realized, wow, she's testing out her boundaries too. Like maybe she's looking for a connection, but also maybe she's practicing her boundaries of kicking people out of her intimate space. So I started saying, thank you. When she would say, get out of my room, I'd go, okay, thank you. I'm leaving. Or I'd go, thank you for kicking me out of your room. And she did say, why are you saying that? And I said, because I respect your boundaries. But I've gotten back into feeling hurt again. So now I'm glad we're having this talk. I got to go back. I got to do it again.
That's one of the hardest ones. One of the hardest ones to really embody. Like, you can say it, but it's like, ugh, it feels so like forced sometimes. Like, I know
it didn't feel, I actually had a shift of consciousness when I started doing it. I actually started to be like, wait, her kicking me out of her room is great. Like, I never got to kick anyone out of my room when I was, you know what I mean? I just started to be like, this is awesome. But then now it's sneaking back in. It's sneaking back in my hurt child feelings.
Right. Well, it's like the screaming for me, like when my kid like screams no, or like, you know, is really loud. Like, I'm just like, my instinct is to say, oh, you don't have to scream, which is still, you know, sort of a corrective, even though it's like gentle, it's like, I'm still telling her what to do. And I remember talking about this so much with Ruthie and Vivek, and they were like, you should just say like, thanks for screaming. Thank you for telling me, like, this is so important to you. I find it so hard to like keep doing it though. Like, I'll slip back into my.
Flipped back in.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when you really decide, I'm going to do this and I'm going to say thank you and I'm going to mean it. Like, when you do that, you start to look forward to them doing the thing. That's what's so crazy.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I can't wait till she kicks me out of a room so I could sit, so I could really, really feel thank you for kicking me out. In fact, right so now true. I'm having that thought like, oh, right, I'm going to go back to enjoy, like excited to give her that feedback. And it like makes me look forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it changes the energy.
I hope she kicks me out of her room today. So I can say it.
It's so against the grain talking about it. Like, it's so opposite.
Probably one of the ones that people would like read online. Like, probably one of the ones where, like, when you're new to this and you see Vivek and he's telling that, you're like, what the hell is this guy talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, that's insane.
What are you talking about? What are you gonna, thank you for spitting on me, you know? Like, what?
It took me a long time to get here.
The things is like, oh, you're encouraging bad behavior. You're training them to, you know, all that stuff. You're not setting limits, and they don't know what's good and bad. They're going to go spit on their friend, and now they're going to go pinch
people
everyone.
People would definitely look at me if I were saying that at the park. People would look at me with absolute disgust. Like, I would never be allowed back there. Like, it would just, but like that is so, such a great example of how it changes the energy, like completely. Like, he got from you that affirmation that was really in that moment of your most, like, here's like this torture moment for me. I'm still here. You know what? Thank you. I'm still with you.
Yeah.
What if we could all do that? You know, what if we could all get that in response? Like, imagine in a partnership, right? Like, if you could apply that to your partner, then you would be getting that sort of like unconditional positive regard, that unconditional I'm here, even though you just yelled in my face. I'm still, that de-escalates everybody, right? So Amy, you must have some sort of non-coercive dynamic between you and your partner too, I imagine, to be able to do this.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so grateful that I have a partner who is in this with me and wants to grow just as much as I do.
Yeah.
He works a lot. He's currently a medical resident in his last year. So I did want to mention, about 2 years ago, we ended up hiring on. I did this by myself for about a year and a half. And then, you know, my husband works 60 to 90 hour weeks. One time he worked almost 100. And that's when I decided we needed to hire on some part-time help. So I am very privileged where I have part-time help, who also is in this space as well, which is really important. But my partner in particular, like, the way we've grown as a couple is, it's almost indescribable how we're able to show up for each other. I love that he can model for me because I have a perfectionist part that just comes out, and it's, you know, really hard on myself, where he's really good about showing up when I make mistakes or he makes mistakes, knowing that we're all human, we make mistakes, and you're an amazing person still, and you always will be.
Doing this mindset shift with our kids is not an intellectual thing. I mean, it is important to know how it works. What does it look like? What are the thoughts? Like, how do you come out of oppressive thinking? That is a whole study. But then there's your process, you know, and like that's constant and ongoing. And when parents don't have a process, you can't do this. You can't do what we're talking about. It's not possible.
That's so true. Yeah.
How do you keep yourself open, loving, and flexible with your kids? Like, what are your practices? Because I know you do parts work.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have your own process? What does that look like?
First, I sought out like a lot of support. I think, you know, I went to therapy for a while. I found another therapist who's so great. She's amazing. She's also in this space. Because my first therapist, I couldn't talk to her about kid stuff because we just were not aligned. And then I had to gain a lot. I feel like I've had to gain a lot of tools along the way that I never had growing up. Just whether it's tapping, you know, going outside, and I have to lay down on the ground and like tell myself, I'm not being attacked by a bear. you're here, you're safe. and using what tool in that moment works for me. And it changes. It's not always the same. And then I think besides practice, so much practice in this space, what really kind of clicked with me was turning this philosophy inward. So I feel like one of the hardest parts for this journey for me was applying this philosophy to myself. So, you know, changing that inner dialogue, honoring my own needs, and unlearning the really harsh critic and parts that are inside myself. So, and that's been like the most powerful transformation, is extending the non-coercive, compassionate parenting to my inner world, which has helped me embody this path even more fully. And it's what makes this philosophy like a deep act of self-love. Is, I think that was the last part that took me a long time to finally bring it all together, and accepting that I'm not perfect. So hearing people in this space make mistakes has helped me, because then I'm not at home thinking I'm doing this all wrong because I'm making these mistakes.
That's perfectly said.
Amy, you're awesome. You're so beautiful. Your love is just shining out, and you're so articulate and just very clear, and you have so much to add to this conversation. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time and energy.
Yeah, thank you so much, Amy.
I appreciate this so much. Oh, all right. Bye.
Bye, Amy.
Bye.
This has been Your Kids Don't Suck. You can find me, Kara Tedstone, at www.karatedstonetherapy.com and on Instagram at Kara Tedstone Therapy. On my website, you'll find links to recommended readings and a link to my Reparenting with Mindfulness workbook, available now on Amazon.
You can find me, Rathia Lee, at www.rathia.com. That's RYTHEA.com. There you'll find published books, articles, and music, and parenting videos. Also, I'm on TikTok at Rathia Lee, on Instagram at Rathia Lee. You can book parent mentoring sessions with me through my website. And also, I have an Advice from a Loving Bitch YouTube show that helps people heal self-hatred, and that's rathia.com/advice. It is important and essential to put our voices, Rathia and Kara, in a context. We are two white, cisgendered, straight, middle-class women living with financial and societal privilege. Because of this, our perspectives are limited and do not reflect the realities of all of our listeners. This podcast will feature guests with expertise around conscious parenting who differ in race, class, abilities, sexual orientation, and histories from us.
to broaden the conversation and reflect the lives of as many people as possible. 25% of the proceeds of this podcast will go to creators of color who have been mentors and influences on our work and in our growth as parents.
If you like our show, please subscribe and stay tuned for more conscious parenting advice and insights. And check out our link tree at linktr.ee/yourkidsdontsuck to donate and connect with us.